gone one up top.
I gone one up top. All the other formations, they surely have to stop.
I gone one up top.
I gone one up top. Jamie and Jordan, the bullshit never stops.
You're listening to the One Up Top podcast, hosted by Jamie and Jordan. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and all of our social media outlets at One Up Top Podcast.
And a very big welcome to the Georgie Kelly Show. My name is Jamie. I'm sitting next to my co-host here, and he's absolutely rattled by me calling it that. How are you getting on, Jordan?
I'm brand new, Jamie. Obviously, fucking, you've seen it to get what happened Friday, but no, we're not going to.
Well, a poll suggests otherwise that you should be apologising to Georgie Kelly this week after the slander that you were giving out to him over the last few weeks.
The majority of people are idiots.
And well, only 22% were on your side, 78% were on mine, so I think you owe people an apology. I'm going to be rolling his eyes here. He's rattled. He's absolutely rattled. But look, we're here again for another week of the One Up Top podcast. I'd like to thank the two lads for coming in last week, Danny Grant and his brother Evan, who were absolutely brilliant to speak with, and very good honesty from Danny Grant. Jordan, want to show our sponsors there?
Yeah, we'd like to thank, we've got Bodges handed out a few cans of Elton to the boys, so we'll crack one open there.
Absolutely, yeah, we've got a couple of other cans of, was this White Hag Brewery, which is an Irish beer as well, so thanks very much to Bodge for kicking us out once again with a bit of gargle every week, and also thanks to Vault Fashions, who gave me a nice gym piece last week, which I'm still wearing again tonight. So thanks very much for kicking us out once again, and we hope everyone looks forward to the show now today.
And we've got New Age Barbers as well. Jay Blake in Fisborough opening his barbers back open. Don't forget to go down there. And also, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Ford Ireland, for giving me a car this week.
Yeah, very nice of Ford, or myself even, to sell Jordan O'Reilly my Fiesta. After putting it up on done deal for $2,000, he took it off me for considerably less. So thanks very much, Mr. O'Reilly. Enjoy getting that NCT.
And today we've got our two guests. We gave you a hint. We said one scored a hat-trick for Bowles. The other one played the 2012 4-0 game. And you all said Wardies. These are all fucking wrong. So today we've got Andy McNulty and Dave Scully. Lads, thanks for coming in.
Well, lads, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we would have liked to have you to our bigger guest this week. But Danny Grant took all our budget, so we got stuck with you two this time around.
We're used to working on low budgets.
I'm used to doing things for free.
Pay for homes for 2 years.
Yeah, paying subs.
Brilliant. So, as we do with every show, we'll run through the league table. Bowles seem to be in sixth place for the last 10 weeks. Probably, what are we, 5 points off a European spot. As the results on the weekend there, Derry and Pat's got a 2-2 draw. Looked like a fairly well-earned draw for Derry City up there. Finn Harps keeping up the good form. Adam Foley on the score sheet again as they beat Swollen.
You called him shite last week.
I did call him shite last week, and he is shite in my opinion as well. But look, that's just me. They beat Oscar Brennan Swollen Head 2-1 down in the RSC. Drogheda keeping up their good form again. Dane Massey seems to be banging them in left, right and centre for them. He's playing centre half for them. Did you ever play against Dane Massey at all, Dave?
Yeah, he's a tough player, a great player.
They have a really good side there. I know Chris Lyons is there. He would have played with you as well. He's
a great one. That's another quality player.
Yeah, he's a good player.
No centre of gravity. He scores goals as well, you know.
He's built like a brick shithouse. He's like yourself, Jordan.
Robbie Douglas as well. Another blade lunatic at
that. As you said, we called him Ricardo Carvalho every time he gets played against Bowles. Yeah. It was fucking brilliant until he played us.
So they're keeping up good form, and obviously they beat Longford by a very big scoreline again. They did very similar in Flankhair Park. Rovers versus the other Rovers. Dave Sligo actually got their first win in Tala for the first time.
Winning on Monday is not for everyone. Beating Dundalk is not for everyone.
Absolutely. They got their first win in Tala for the first time since 2013, which is actually a little bit shocking. Romeo Parks got the goal.
Lads, do you think that result has been coming for Rovers? You look at all the last minute goals. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. They've obviously struggled. I think there's seven or eight lads injured at the moment, so they're probably struggling to fill that void. They normally rely on a heavy squad, you know, like, so they can rotate, but there's some key players there that they're missing. Finn, Watts injured. It's, you know, they're key players. Like anyone else would struggle with them, you know what I mean? Like, but saying that, they still have a quality 11 going out there. They'll be competitive enough, but, you know, they're probably relying on strength and depth in their squad, you know? Mm.
Sligo Rovers goalkeeper, Ed McGinty. I think he's the best goalkeeper in the league.
Yeah, he's flying, yeah.
I think was he in the Irish under 21 squad today? I think he might be actually too old for now.
I'm not sure. He was in it before.
I think he's a brilliant goalkeeper. I've seen a couple of his saves there against Rovers and the game on Friday as well. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Whether he's better than James Talbot or not, maybe. What would be your opinion? The two lads, you know, two young goalkeepers in the league.
Yeah,
James Talbot as well.
I think McGinty at the moment is probably catching a few more headlines, but James, in fairness, he's just Mr. Consistent. Like, he does really well every week. He's like, that's what you want from a keeper is consistency, you know what I mean? Like, and he's been, even though I think he's only 24, you know, he still has great experience and he's doing well. I think, you know, you've seen him over the last couple of years. I know he had a bit of competition with McGuinness there last year, but he's after coming in now. I think he's played every game, so he's flying at the moment.
Yeah, he certainly is. We'll move on to the game of Friday against Pats. Obviously, it was very disappointing, but thankfully, we didn't come into this podcast on two losses on the spin like we've done before. But I think we could probably put the game and Pats down to poor game management at times. Really,
I'm not sure about that. Like, 90 minutes, we bossed the whole game by and large. I think Dawson and Devoy is a fucking... I suppose everyone's watching League of Ireland, they can say, oh, I was at the match. Fortunately, the club allowed us to have a one spot per home game. And like, the stuff he does, even off the ball, you can see his movement is amazing. And I think we really bossed the game on Friday. We're lucky. I think Pats would have felt robbed if it was a draw because of the referee's decision. But we also feel robbed over the basis of the performance. Yeah. So look, that's just the way football is.
Dave, you take a penalty. What do you do? Do you blast the top corner like Georgie did that night? He seemed to hit it with a bit of like malice against his old club. It was like he was trying to really make a point and say, right, I'm going to bang this in the top corner, prove all yous wrong.
Well, if you're confident, like, you can stick it to either side, but if you're low on confidence, you just smash it down the middle, to be honest.
Yeah. And did you think, obviously, he had a header that he probably should have done a lot better with? It looked like he was very low on confidence on Friday as well, and his critics were out to get him once again, I think.
He's a bit similar to myself, but a lot better. Like, he's up top on his own, and he does a lot of the donkey work.
Mm.
But now, like, the other night against the dog, he's adding goals to his game, like, you know?
Yeah.
But his movement and his whole play is next to none.
Second to none in the league. I think a lot of people have been praising that. I think people overlook that as well. They just see, if you're not getting goals up front, you know, your hold-up play, your link-up play with other players, that seems to go out the window sometimes. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes it is overlooked, you know, the hard work that he probably be creating spaces for other wingers or midfielders to run into. But ultimately, as a striker, you are sort of judged on your goals. And I know he hasn't probably been firing too well in the last couple of years. But look, that'll give him a huge boost of confidence. Like a hat-trick, it doesn't matter how you get them. It doesn't matter. It's about getting them in,
you know? Yeah, like, I had said it. I know a couple of weeks ago.
You said it every week.
No, I didn't say it every week. I said, I said that he works hard and his back to goal is very good. And I said he looked hopeless facing goal at stages. That's exactly what I said. And a Pats fan said after the game on Friday.
Don't mind Pats fans.
No, hold on a second. A Pats fan said.
Bunch of arseholes.
If he's slagging George Kelly, I wonder what are you saying about me.
But the Pats fan said his back to goal is brilliant. He goes, he works his bollocks off. And then it's just so frustrating that when he gets the opportunity, it looks like he just falls off. Now, we see Monday that he took his chances. And like, I know you might say there's an element people want to see him to fail.
I think you're hell-bent on the same
no,
fail.
I don't. Nobody wants to see him to fail, but like at the end of the day, people do have to, like, we don't want to be on this podcast criticising players and calling people out X, Y, and Z. And because we know some of the players and whatnot, but at the end of the day, we owe the podcast a little bit of honesty to how we feel. This is like being in the bar after the match. Like, we're not trying to be fucking Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. We're two dickheads who 90% of the people listen no more than fucking we ever will.
The two lads are actually baffled that we actually run a sports podcast, to be honest. Because you and me resemble more like a fucking Weight Watchers meeting than anything else. So, we'll move on to the Dundalk game as well. And obviously, we're absolutely delighted to come in here with that win last night. Andy, I seen you also mentioned that on Twitter, was Jim McGilton's reaction. He said he was embarrassed and ashamed by that performance. And his interview was very, very stark. I thought it was harrowing stuff nearly.
I suppose, look, I can see where he's coming from. He probably doesn't really know what's going on. He should. He's the main man there. He's meant to know what's going on and what the problems are and try and fix them. I just think he's probably putting his hand out to be slapped a lot with some of his interviews, some of the things he says. Obviously, the results haven't been helping, and then not being able to appoint a manager in God knows how many weeks it is now. So, you know, I just don't think that whole scenario is helping him. But some of the things he said in that interview, from a player, if I was in that dressing room, I don't think I'd be best pleased. Now, look, maybe he's looking for the reaction from the players, which it might work, but I just think, you know, it just felt like he was throwing a couple of players under the bus, to be honest with you.
It certainly looked like that. Some of those players in that team, they're obviously very well played, very well paid players. Likes of Wilfred Zahibo, he's kind of come into the league. Apparently he's on very big money, like a lot of these players.
You're talking stuff you wouldn't get in League 2, maybe even League 1. Like.
And, you know, obviously the buck stops with the manager quite a lot. And I know Magilton's a director of football, not exactly the manager or the coach there as far as I know, but
looks like he's a pain in the balls with a tail,
but yeah. the feedback I've been getting is that there's phone calls getting made from America, and people in America have the management and the players like puppets on strings. You know, like he's phoning up and saying, listen, take him off. Like, I don't think they have the management at this club don't think they have control over what's going on around the club.
Yeah, well, that's not good. Like, obviously, you see that at other clubs and across the water and stuff like that. You don't, the manager's there to do a job, and if he ultimately fails with picking a team and getting results, then that's fine. But I don't think you can have that conflict of the manager kind of walking on eggshells, waiting for the directors or waiting for the owners to say, who do you want to play this week or whatnot. I think just the whole thing has been a circus the last few months anyway, you know.
I think what I was alluding to, though, was that there's a lot of experience in that team, a lot of very, you know, well-regarded players. You know, it looks like they don't really know each other out on the pitch, but, you know, for 11 players to really underperform, you know, is it down to the players as well? Or do you think that, you know, they're so low in confidence? Or would you expect better from the likes of Chris Shields, Andy Boyle?
Well, these players have played in Europe, playing the Champions League. Like, they have this winning mentality. But obviously, like, if things are not getting done right at the club at the top from to the bottom, like, they're obviously going to be pissed off and they're going to be as working hard as they should be. Like, like they're annoyed. Like, if someone else is picking a team that's not even there, that's in America, like, and that it's turned into a comedy show, like, and
it is, yeah.
Like, players too get frustrated, and they have their little talks in the dressing room and they're trying to pitch, and it affects you.
I think as you said, look, from the outside looking in, we don't really know what's going on. It does look like a bit of a shambles, but from the players, that the quality that they've brought in, they're paying an awful lot of money. The fans, the league itself probably expect a little bit more from that team. You know, I think you're right. There's an awful lot of money going into that budget, so they should be really picking up results.
And just one player we're going to speak about particularly, Darragh Leahy went to Dundalk. I think, look, you can never, no one will pay for that experience he will get for playing in the Emirates in the Europa League. So that's worth any move. But he left Bowes and there was radars on him over from UK. He's gone there. When Pert left, I'm not sure if he played too much when Pert was there, but when Filippo came in, he didn't play much football. Or a year later now, he's still not starting. Like, you'd imagine those scouts and radars have disappeared off him.
Yeah, look, they'll probably be a bit of a shadow over, because obviously you want lads playing, you want them doing well week in, week out for them to take a chance on them. So he's probably good. Look, he's taking a chance. It's probably, look, I don't know. It's hard. It's probably hard when a club like Dundalk come and offer a contract, you know, full-time football, probably a decent wage there for him as well.
Champions
and
League,
like, you know, look, as you said,
well,
I know he's
variables there. Yeah.
He's got experience in
playing. But just on that, like he's getting sold a dream as well, but we don't know other people's, like, his family situation. He doesn't want to be waiting home. There's all these things you have to take into account as well, you know, with players.
Enough about that shit show up the road. Let's talk about a very, very comprehensive Bohemian FC performance. A couple of players that really stood out, and I think one has caught the eye of a lot of people, was Rory Feely playing centre-half. He looks like someone who's got a lot of pace. Obviously, you played with his brother Kevin in front of you, who is, as Richard Flair on Twitter said, that he is a wizard. Woo! With a size 5 All-Ireland. But his brother Rory looks very, very comfortable at centre-half. A lot of pace, a lot of strength, a lot of height.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, that's what you want as a centre-half. You know, you just want someone big and strong who's decent in the air, decent on the ground. Someone that can put a bit of consistency together, put big performances in when it's needed, you know. And It just builds it up. It's like having a good keeper. When you have a good defence and you have a good keeper, makes the team play a hell of a lot better.
And Dave, was he a good keeper?
He was absolutely fantastic keeper. Like, if I was playing against Andy, I'd say, look at the bleeding gutting him. I'm going to bury him. Like, I swear to God, the shot stopper is next to none. He's just commands his area. Like, honestly, I know he's sitting here beside me, but if I didn't think he was good, I'd say it to his face as well. You know what I mean?
He has a few times.
And we'll move up a little bit the pitch. There's a lot of talk around Stephen Mannan. We've now got Bort on the left, who is sensational at the moment. Ali Coote on the right, who is equally as sensational at the moment. The talk around Stephen Mannan. Stephen Mannan doesn't get in that team at the moment.
The way Coote plays as well, I think Long has him tucking in as a third centre mid as well. Coming in off the right to kind of give us a dig out. Even when he changed the formation the other night, he was able to put Coote in the two. And moving around the pitch, he looks like a very, very deployable player around there. And he's coming into his own a bit more. And as you've seen, we've seen Burt's touch out on the left for Georgie Kelly's second goal. It was absolutely fantastic. He absolutely looped it over Cameron Dunnington. He sent it to the shop for bread and milk. So
and a couple of other great performances that night, like Davoy once again is absolutely fantastic.
Smashing player, yeah.
Tierney as well.
Tierney,
I mean,
yeah, Tierney's a great player.
We've been playing well over the last few weeks. You have to think about it. Like, there's been a lot of players that are going from Bowes and a lot of players that are coming in. These lads are only starting to gel. We've dealt with Trevor in Kildare County and Bray Wonders. He will not take any messing or any slacking from these players. Yeah. If they're not doing their job of training, and they'll train the way they play, so the performances on the pitch are only starting to catch the eye of people now. Absolutely. And the average age of the team there, you know, it was 25 years of age. Like, yeah. So it's a young squad.
And I think you're dead right. I mean, the last couple of weeks, I mean, maybe we should have got something out of the Pats game, but we've been playing really, really well. We're only getting better. There was a player that got a bit of game time on Monday there. His name was Conor Levingston. He's kind of been a little bit forgotten about some of the times. I personally think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. I think he's one of the calmest players in the ball. I think he doesn't give it away. He didn't get much in the team last year because JJ Lunny, for some reason, was getting ahead of him. I think Lunny plays in this team called the First Division now.
Yeah, he's down fucking... I think he plays the two boys here.
Yeah,
I don't know, Tech United, or something.
We wouldn't know much about that, but I thought Levingston was a little bit hard done by last season. This year, you know, you couldn't play him ahead of Buckley and Davoy right now. Obviously, Bastien Harry's probably itching for a bit of game time as well, but it was nice to see Levingston back on the pitch again. I'm going to move on to the main man, Georgie Kelly, getting a hat-trick, silencing a lot of critics on Twitter, on the messaging board, and sitting beside me here. I thought he was fantastic. I thought
it was excellent. And I have said his back to goal has been excellent. And what's let him down is what's happened in front of goals. So while you're here pulling the mickey off yourself...
You're getting very angry. He's at the goal red as Alan Brazil. Here he is.
You had his pulses in the world, but...
Fuck off. You have a head like Alan Brazil giving out here. Go away with it.
It's only because I'm sunburned. but we want to see him do that every week. That's his job at the end of the day. I know Dundalk are shambles. He still had to take them chances. You know, again, the Pats game, he had two fantastic chances. He should have scored both. Like, it's very easy to get carried away with someone's performance when they're playing well like you are. And again, it's very easy to fucking have a dig at someone on Twitter like fucking all the Bowls fans are doing. But do you see 95% of this abuse and bullshit on Twitter if people are games? And I don't think so.
I agree with you. It's kind of not, it's very hostile there for a few weeks, particularly some of the stuff that was brought up on the message board as well. Wasn't very desirable. And there's no doubt the players search their own names. There's no doubt that managers search their own names. You know,
it's not for the want of trying. We said, I'm not sure if it was ability or confidence issue. And we've seen that he might have the ability for Monday. But like, he's going to have to do this more than once. He's going to have to... One swallow doesn't make a summer, as everyone fucking knows. You can't just get one performance and base it. He has put in a several performance that shows he has the potential. Now it's up to him to do it.
Dave, what do you think? As a striker yourself?
I think people don't realise like the work he does off the ball. He wins his headers, he holds up the play, he brings other players into play. Like, and then if he's adding goals to his all-round play, like, it's obviously when you get beaten, the fans look, oh, Georgie missed a chance, he's bleeding shy, like all this bleeding stupid talk, like, you know. Yeah. But if you actually watch the game and watch his running off the ball and watch what he gives to the team, other than goals, like, he is a top player. And like, he's showing for the dog, he's been around, like, he is going to be a good player for Bowes and he will score goals because he's a handful.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Do you get much abuse when you weren't scoring, Dave?
Listen, he
got abused when he was playing, never mind scoring.
Honestly, when I was playing, I think I was flicking the ball at myself and trying to run onto it, and I was just running around like a head case because our game, we had a young team, and we were mostly just defending, starting off, because the team was fun together at the start, you know. Yeah. So we were just defending, and then we started getting results and we started getting more confident and getting used to each other, and the fans took to us, and then it was like we had a 12 man at times, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. One last thing on the Dundalk game, Andy. I have to say, probably the worst goalkeeper I've seen in the league for quite some time, Alessio Abebe.
He's part of some Chinese betting syndicate.
Yeah, either that or he's involved in human trafficking or something like that, I don't know. But Andy, what do you think? He let in a couple of soft ones there this season. He's made some mistakes as well.
Yeah, and
for a big man as well. He's about 6'6" as well, you know.
Yeah, and what we were just talking about, Feely, there is equally when you have a nervous or underperforming goalkeeper as well, it can be equally as tragic for the outfielders, because there's just no confidence in him at the moment. You can see even I'm not too sure, maybe one of the commentators or a different podcast during the week or after the game.
You listen to our podcast?
Well, allegedly.
Gordon, we're done. Pack up the mics while we're here.
But I think they mentioned like the players' reactions as it went in.
They looked angry, didn't they?
It was nearly here we go again moment. And when you have that, the lack of confidence in keepers, like, it's very, very hard to turn. Like, he has to just keep working hard and hopefully it clicks. That's all I can really say. Like, yeah, look, he's made a few howlers, but all he has to do is just keep working hard and hopefully it turns around and his players get a bit of confidence in him again.
Brilliant. We'll move on now to talk about the two lads.
So, as we always do, you both have obviously a different tale to tell each. Dave, so you're a bit of a self-proclaimed Bowls fan. Now, I don't normally hang people that tell us information because he's a Rovers fan. Our nephew Jerry told us you spent a lot of your time going to talk on a Friday to see the scum.
He's a bleeding Billy Lur. I wouldn't go and watch them, for fuck's sake. No, the only match I went to watch Rovers was, not as a Rovers fan, as a Ronaldo fan, I went to watch the Real Madrid match, you know.
You're not spotted with Jerry doing an interview at the Rovers-Liverpool game.
Well, that wasn't me bollocks, was it? That was at the fucking...
in the Viva.
No, that was in Daily Mode, that was. He done an interview with me.
Rovers and Liverpool friendly.
Oh, you're stunned now.
Well, I'm a little video evidence.
That's what it cost the side.
You got out of that quick.
Fucking me.
How did you get into the Bowls, Dave, as such?
I'm from the early Dublin 7 down Montpellier. Like, you see the lights there when you're going up and just... I just love football. I never drank or smoked in my life. I was into the boxing. My dream was to be a footballer, but I was a better boxer, you know what I mean?
You're out for probably that one night in the taxi too.
My dad never forgives me because I gave up the boxing league, because I went over to Carlisle with Rally Collins and I just gave up the boxing. And my wife says I wasn't allowed to do it when I come back because my face is in bits already.
Andy, do you have any League of Ireland background? Or did you follow a club in particular? Or, I know you keep an eye on all the results, which is brilliant. But...
Yeah, no, I'd just be a fan of the league, I suppose. I would have gone because I'm born and bred Sandyford, so like obviously all my friends and family would have been Shamrock Rovers. But don't worry, disclaimer, I didn't go to any of the games. I would have gone to sort of UCD and Bray, and just because it was more local, you know.
God,
what
that
I mean?
Sounds terrible.
I know, yeah. it wasn't a great experience, but no, I would have been just a fan of the league, and obviously growing up and getting more exposure to sort of the highlights and online and stuff like that, I would have just followed the league in general rather than anyone in particular.
And I suppose we'll move on to the 2012 season. You both signed for Bowls that year. Could you both tell us how that came about? I know there's a bit of a circus for those trials, but how did you both get into it?
Well, we were near the end of the transfer market in the Leinster Senior League. It was the end of January, I believe. And I got a phone call off Trevor Malloy, who was playing at Bluebell at the time. And he rang me and he said, listen, don't tell the manager, but I'm after getting a phone call. Would you be interested in going down to Bowls? And like this, as I said, this was a week before the transfer window in the Leinster Senior League. And, you know, I didn't want to leave the lads high and dry. We were going for the league. Within the Leinster Senior League at the time, but when a team like Bowes come in for you, like, it's very, very hard to turn down a great opportunity. And it was a bit of a last minute thing because we had to rush through the papers, and like literally I was down training with the lads then like the following night. Do you know what I mean? So it was a bit of a mad situation, but probably Trevor would have been one of the main sort of middlemen in those conversations, I suppose. Yeah.
And Dave, what about you? I remember you at the trial game. I remember saying, who's this elf up front?
Yeah. Owen just said there was a match on against the PFU team. Would you like to play? And I thought it was a wind up. So I said, the match, yeah. I was banging in goal just for the local team. I'm definitely like in the AOL. So he says, why don't you go up and give it a chance? So I just went up for the game of ball and bleeding. After the game, Martin pulled me out and Terry Butler just says, would you sign? I said, fucking right, I'll sign. It was my dream to sign for Bowes, like, and I couldn't believe, like, it just fell into place on me, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the 2012 season, obviously Bowes came off the back of a very successful period, but it all built on sand. 2011, we still had a big budget, big team. The budget for 2012 was in and around 118 grand, I believe. That's including management and everything. So we had a massive squad. I know for a lot of people, 2012 was like a very humbling season. I know myself and Jordan were kind of 17, 18. It was a big year for us because we were, you know, we were young. We were enjoying the bars, the buses. We were really getting into it, going out every night. So it sticks in a lot of people's memory that season. And, you know, there was a lot of good players in the team as well. I mean, aside from you two lads, but though, actually, you aren't even good. I don't know what I'm saying.
Finally, some honesty.
But we had at the back Evan McMillan, Rory, or Kevin Feely, Detter, Owen Heary, Luke Bourne as well at the time.
Now, looking back, that's not a bad back four,
it's
is
a
it?
Pretty good, yeah. Pretty good team. Mulcahy.
Mulcahy was the glue on the team. He was just his talk and his presence around the pitch, like, and talking to young lads. He dragged us through some matches. Like, he's just a gentleman and a brilliant, brilliant player. Like.
Absolute battle axe move.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
A couple of good wide players as well. Kevin Devaney was in the team. Carl Moore. Andy Mulligan, who was...
I remember him, the small skinny fit.
He was quite well rated as well. He kind of just went off the map as well.
Yeah.
Up front, Dinny Corcoran as well.
Brilliant lad.
Again, that was actually similar to what we were talking about Georgie Kelly there. Like, Dinny, in that season, he gave you all effort. Like, okay, he mightn't have been scoring many goals. But
no, Evan McMillan was scoring all the goals.
Yeah.
Evan, up front. Scully off.
I was actually looking at I wasn't looking at the stats. I was listening to Aaron Callaghan call them out. 63% of our goals came from midfield. 27% of our goals came from defence. And 10% came from our strikers.
Yeah.
Which just shows...
Says a lot about you, Dave, to be honest.
Like, I probably played most of the games. Like, I was just there just to hold the ball up, win frees, and just give us a breather, really.
But I think that's what everyone admired about that team. Everyone, I think deep inside, a lot of Bowls fans were resigned to, we're going down this end.
Yeah.
Like, this is a team thrown together by a manager no one's ever heard of, really. And look, that squad is probably... Everyone's only really looking back now, and you're even probably looking back now and thinking, this squad built the foundations, essentially, to keep us in the league. And built that honesty on the pitch that carried forward right through to this day.
I don't think we realised at the time. Like, obviously, we knew we were up against it in most games. And the thing about it was, we knew we were limited in what we could do. We obviously had some very good players that on their day. Like, if you look at some of the lads that are still playing now, like, they're still playing in that Bowls team, and they're probably across the league elsewhere. But they're only really starting to get consistency. A couple of years ago, we were, nine years ago.
It's fucking mad to think, isn't it?
So 9 years ago, they were still learning they were learning on the job, you know what I mean? And that was the thing. Like, we would be inconsistent. We'd be terrible 1 week, and then we'd be not so terrible the next week, and then we'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
So it was just about getting that consistency. But we knew what we wanted to do. And, you know, as I said, it's only really now you look back and you realise, Jesus, that was... a really, really good season for what we had together.
Yeah, to be brutally honest, I wasn't good enough to play in that team or play in the league. But as I said to you earlier on, like, hard work beats talent all day long. And all I did, this fella's going to be better than me. This defender's going to be better than me. But I'm going to outwork him. I'm going to give him a tough night. And the fans seem to latch on to that.
That was the honesty we got from players. Yeah. And that's even now to this day. I know people we mentioned Kelly enough, but. People, when they see it, they appreciate the honesty of players, which are not. That's why the dark players were probably getting abused by fans last week, because they're not getting the honesty on the pitch.
Yeah,
they're not getting their £5,000 a week worth, you know. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know? No, but just on slagging players and even on Twitter, with all this mental health, some players are not. Oh, we couldn't give a shit. I was getting slagged every week. I could take it. Andy would probably take it.
Yeah. Well, young players lads not growing up,
you just can't take it.
Yeah.
And you go hiding, and you won't want the ball. Like,
I think that's a very, very good point. And I think we did say it on the first week of the podcast. Everyone needs to kind of really calm down online and don't be abusing players, because, you know, they are only human as well, and they are trying their best.
They're it's like a job. Like if you're not doing their job well, someone's not allowed to come in and abuse you. Like, you
know? Hey, Rockwell does it enough.
My motto is, like, if you have nothing good to say, don't say anything at all. You either support your team in the good, win, lose, or draw, or you don't support the team at all. That's my motto. Okay.
That the first five games of that season, was just sort of, we're going to go through the season, essentially.
Yeah.
We lost the first five, we scored zero. And I remember at the time, there was a football club, I think it might have been in Cyprus, and they hadn't scored in 10 games. And all the fans said, the arrows pointed at the goals, and that was being sent around. I don't think WhatsApp, I think it was Facebook at the time, that picture was being sent around. But I don't think we ever translated that on the pitch to use, and I'd hope not we didn't do it.
No.
But what was the sense of relief then when we got that first win?
Against Cork as well, wasn't it?
Good Friday against Cork, yeah.
Yeah, well, my first game was, I think, with the week before, wasn't it? Was Pat's the draw nil all at home.
Was Craig Sexton number one start of the season?
Yeah, because as I said, I came in late. I came in to, the lads had pretty much done their pre-season. I think I only got maybe 2 or 3 weeks of pre-season with the lads, even less. So, obviously, as Dave alluded to earlier on, I tend to carry a bit of weight when I'm playing.
Don't worry. You're sitting in the corner with Jamie Whelan here, so don't worry about it.
So the agreement was, look, I'll work with Fred Davis, who was the goalkeeping coach at the time, and just be flat out for 4 or 5 weeks or whatever, and just bide me time. And then I eventually got in, and Yeah, the relief when we start picking up those points, you could feel it. Then we started to get a bit of belief because, you know yourself, when you're 4 or 5 games without a win or even a point on the board or even a goal, as you said, you start saying to yourself, fuck, this could be a long season. You know, we could be getting bleeding bashed here every week. But thankfully, it turned around and, you know, yeah, we got there in the end.
No, thankfully, because, like, our first 5-6 matches, it was like pre-season for us. We were all getting used to each other, or getting used to our movements, our touches, what he does on the ball, what he doesn't do off the ball. And then when we got that first result, it was such a relief. And then we just built from that, and our confidence was better and better each week after.
As the season went on, we started to get a couple of wins. One game that sticks in my memory was Monaghan beating us. And Ryan McAvoy scored from what I think was all of 35 yards. Yeah, Roddy Collins was in charge.
Came in after 5 minutes.
And Roddy Collins was in charge. They beat us 2-1. I think Brian Maher got one of the goals.
Roddy done the "I Will Survive" after that, didn't he?
He did. He did an interview after. Obviously, Monaghan didn't survive. They went tits up during the Euros, I think it was.
Lenny was on the piss while Monaghan went tits up.
Yeah, Monaghan went out of business.
I played with them before as well. Yeah.
Now here's your play with Finn Harps, and you thought that was a Monaghan.
Anywhere outside Dublin, I don't know where there was more cowards at the match than Monaghan than the fans.
A Bowes official filled us in that Dave Scully signed for a club where he didn't even know where the pitch was, and he rang him the next morning saying, "I didn't know that was 4 hours away. You must be fucking joking me."
I honestly didn't.
Obviously, some really big moments in that season. Probably the one that sticks with the fans the most is beating Rovers 4-0, the ultimate underdog story that season.
Yeah,
Dave, I don't think you were in the squad.
I was suspended.
Right, Dave Scully picked up and blocked G after the third or fourth goal.
Ran
down into the stand. We had you up in the air.
It was a great feeling because
the third goal went in,
I was walking out the game. I think I'm playing bag of chips or something. All of a sudden, tour got when the fans went playing crazy. It was playing unbelievable atmosphere.
I was outraged. Andy, we alluded to a couple of weeks ago that game could have easily been 1-1 or 2-1 after half time. Sorry.
You're smiling here now.
Did you find the video?
No, there is no video.
Dotsie, if you're listening to this.
Fuck you, Dotsie. you did make that amazing save. They hit the post as well. It could have been a very different game. Obviously, we went on to get the 3 more goals. But for you, how was it to play in that game and to be? And it's a result and a fixture that's always going to be revered and loved by Bowes fans. You know, this was the pinnacle that season. You know,
yeah, it was only really then I kind of realised how big that derby was. You know, that rivalry is something fierce. Like we were joking about it before we came in, but. When I was going to get the ball behind the goal for a goal kick, and just the fucking venom from the Rovers fans behind, and I'd look up and I'd see friends and family in the crowd, like, you know what I mean? That's how mad it was, and you know, like, look. In fairness, it was unbelievable. On the day, we just clicked. As I said just there a minute ago, we were either decent or really good or atrocious, and on that day we just clicked and everything went in and. Everything worked for us. It was just a great day, and people still talk about it to this day. Like, yeah.
That's Bohemian history.
Yeah,
the team that was on butter vouchers beating a team that was fucking on big money. They're the biggest paid team at the time. And would you describe the save you made? Or what stage of the game was this? Because you live off this now.
I think we were 1-0 up.
It was all Chestnut.
We were 1-0 up, and it's a free kick, and it might have been Brennan taking it. Was it?
Yeah, I think it was Killian Brennan.
He took it from all of 50 yards. No, he's about 25 out. And I've just tipped it onto the bar, actually. And yeah, luckily, look, that's part and parcel. You just get that slice of luck. But sometimes I'd like to relive them on video if I could, so I can keep the bragging up. But look, it just worked for me that day. Other games that could fly into the top corner and then they go on and beat us 4-5-1. You know, it's just. That's how it goes.
There was a player that played a fairly instrumental role that game, and he was a player that was like kind of loved and hated up always. Dwayne Wilson, who was just such an awkward looking player. Like, he looked like he had pace at times. Other times he looked very sluggish. Yeah. He kind of went off the map. I think he signed for Bray after Bowes, but any information on Dwayne? Is he still playing?
I actually was, when you asked me to come on, I looked up the team and I was kind of going, doing a where are they now? And there was a few. Andy, we mentioned Andy Mulligan kind of fell off the
Joyce
map.
I don't know what's there.
Joyce, Danny Joyce, he actually, I played against him a couple of years ago for Tolka Rovers. in the Leinster senior league.
Talk about the Tug, a decent team.
And Duane is one of those. I don't know what happened to them after a couple of years, but like Aaron alluded to on an interview with Bowes there a couple of weeks ago.
Our arch nemesis, the Bowes, the official Bowes
the podcast. Official Bowes.
They called it the Bowes Television and they changed the podcast to Edge USM.
Losers. Losers.
The boys aren't coming to us.
You never asked us, losers.
Oh, stop. But Aaron said about just throwing him up top because he's just a nuisance. He's just gangly. He's, you know, I don't think he knows
better than Scully.
I don't think he knew what he was. He got sent off the week before.
Yeah, against Pats.
So that's why we didn't have him up front, which was probably a blessing.
I'm actually glad because, like, when I'm on the pitch, I just do mad things. And if I had a score in that game, I probably would have took my top off and the bleeding would have been mayhem. You know what I mean?
I think taking your top off, at least the words, I heard you used to walk into the dressing room, bollock naked, start fucking shadow boxing, and then just sit down and say nothing to nobody for 20 minutes.
That's spot on. I can confirm that definitely happened.
We have one other moment for you. And you gave an inspirational speech at half time and you start headbutting the wall. Could you confirm what the speech was and what game?
Yeah. I don't know what game, but in football, I just do match-up. I love the dressing room banter. Andy will probably tell you about it. And I love, like, getting the lads going and just doing mad things, like, just out of the blue, you know. But people knew me sense of humour, you know. That's what I loved about football. The best thing about football wasn't even the game. It was just the banter before games, the banter after games. And then the game was just a bonus, you know what I mean?
The gas thing about Scullier's team talks would be, there'd be sort of a tension in the room, or like we could be getting beaten, or we're expected a better result or whatever, and he'll come out with something. And he's trying to be constructive about it, but it actually ends up being just a bit of a laugh where the lads are going, what the fuck is this fella saying?
So it actually has, it relieves serious the laugh.
And was this when you were impersonating Aaron Callaghan?
I think he was walking in. Yeah, Aaron loves the old dance off. But I just like, because the lads weren't used to it and everyone, there was a lot of tension all the time, we'd probably just do a dance or say something stupid just to, you know what I mean, just get them to relax, you know what I mean? Like,
Another moment, probably a big moment that year, was you both got to play in Europe.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a fucking disaster to lose 5-1 away.
The first game, Pete Mann had a disallowed goal.
It was a fucking never a disallowed goal.
Never.
I wouldn't know. I was absolutely lording it at the Stone Roses up in Phoenix.
There you go. The real fans were there watching us fucking suffer and it all draw.
We were very unfortunate in that first game. Like, we could have had it wrapped up. I remember at least two clear cut chances where we probably should have. And then there was a sense of when we came into the dressing room afterwards, we were saying, not that it would be handy, but like we should be beating this, and we should have. I said this already on the WhatsApp. Like that'll forever stand in my mind not because of the result, but because of how poor they were and.
Definitely when we got the fourth goal over there. These have never scored two against us.
Yeah, they must have been shite if you scored.
Oh, if you were fucking rude.
Oh, no, in fairness.
I couldn't believe this. It was 2 yards out.
That's one thing, I suppose, you will be able to tell everyone for the rest of your life. You kept a clean sheet in Europe. We won't talk about the second leg, but you scored in Europe more than Gary Twigg.
Yeah, I don't like talking about it because we got beaten. What happened was they were winning 1-0 and then Hardy slipped for their goal and they had a lot of fans there and it was just like a train coming at us.
If you look back at the highlights, the first goal is a slip, Hardy, and your man actually shanks it into the top corner. The second goal is a deflection. It's an own goal. And the third, I think Feely scores an own goal as well. So the first three, and then the fourth and fifth I would nearly discount because we were playing nobody at the back at that stage. If you look at the footage and you look back at the, I remember I was actually playing sweeper keeper and I remember them running at me like 3 and 4 at a time. And it could have been 10-1 in the end. It was just we had to go and chase the game. So yeah, look, it was just very unfortunate. Those first three goals just killed us.
Yes, we were on the playing back with all the fans as well. I know most of them are absolutely blind drunk. I hope you didn't get any abuse off.
No, we were actually shitting there in the airport. Yeah. It was just 5-1 and we were looking at them. They were looking at us. I didn't think we'd get to see them until we got on the plane. But they were fucking brilliant, in fairness. They were having sing songs, Scully drive the bleeding plane, all this. It was bleeding, right? And we got beat 5-1.
I think if ever was a scenario to really sort of highlight how important the fans were for that season was that. And I'm not just saying it was it was a very, very it was a low light of the season. It was a very low moment. Like, I remember, as Scully just said there, seeing the lads in the airport or whatever, and your heart is in your stomach, you know what I mean? And you feel sick because you know they're after paying good money to get across, and you just wanted to fucking do them proud and somewhat. But I have to say, we got on the plane first, our heads are down. We tried not to acknowledge them because we didn't know how the reaction was going to be. But I'm telling you, everyone bar none either hit us on the shoulder, on the head, said, look, unlucky lads, look, we go again next week. And,
yeah.
You know, that's the sort of stuff that we really needed that season because that really helped.
Yeah, because I think I would have been too young. I think I was only 17 at the time to go over. And it was an expensive trip. I think the flights were 400 quid.
No, I think it was about 700 quid.
Was it? Yeah, it was a pricey fucking trip. I was far too young. So the fucking, we were meant to go to Europe this year. I think me and Jay for the first time, and fucking a pandemic hits, doesn't it?
Yeah, just our luck.
Even though I was watching the match in the bar because they were showing it on the stream, there was fucking, everyone was wedged in. It was like fucking sardines.
Yeah.
But like, there was no one shouting at the television going, this is fucking shit, you're a disgrace, like that. It was just everybody knew what you gave, what you could, and all the fucking went tits up. And as you said, it was a fluke result in your eyes. But I think that's the way the fans did accept us. His news are an honest working team, and fucking, we got the best out of his news, got the best out of us, I think.
We were actually devastated that we got beaten 5-1 and the team weren't doing it. We were better than them. Like,
yeah.
We were getting a 3,000 bonus as well. We were all devastated. And then we were going to Slovakia then on the weekend, weren't we?
Yeah, or Czech Republic.
I think Dave Rotwell and Chippy might have had flights booked for the next round already in preparation.
I think they've always done that. I think Anderlecht as well a few years ago. Everyone had that booked as well, but all plans got scuppered.
Well, no, just to reiterate, like, I suppose my overwhelming sort of memory and feeling about the whole season was the relationship with the fans. I know we mentioned it earlier on, and Dave said it, like, they really helped us when we weren't performing well, and they kept with us, because, like, that could have very easily turned, and they accepted us for what we were, and all we could do was give them 100% back. And I think most of the time we did. Yeah, look, we had some shocking results as well. And there were probably some games where we were expecting to win as well. But look, I think overall, it was a good season in terms of how you look back at it now. As I said earlier on, I think I only start realising how important it is. Like, I still meet Bulls fans and they'll say, Jesus, like, 2012, what a season, you know, fucking this, that and the other. And it's a huge privilege to actually play for the club first and foremost, but then when you have the support of the fans, it just adds that little bit, you know. It's just that little bit extra special.
And I think I seen a tweet a while ago. You're still getting a bit of stick off Rovers fans, aren't you?
Yeah, well I do, because as I said, I'm born and bred in Sandyford, so like that's Celtic and Rovers is just right through that area. But it's good. Like it's a bit of banter there as well, you know what I mean? Like there'll be a couple of neighbours to be driving by and be shouting at me dad in the garden saying, Bulls scum, you know, like, but nah, look, that's what it was about. It was just at the end of the day, playing for such a good, such a big club in the country at the highest level was just a privilege for me. And it was a great experience, even though I had some highs and some lows. It was just overall a good experience.
And we finished that season, I think we finished seventh, seventh.
Yeah.
Lads, Dave, you played in 2013. Andy, you left at the end of the season. How did leaving the club come about? I know Greg Murray finished the season in goal for Bowles, but yourself to leave Bowles, and then I believe you were asked to come back as well in 2013. But fill us in on what happened there.
Yeah, it was a bit of a bittersweet sort of ending to the season for me, because We travelled down to Sligo basically, and the team was named in the training session beforehand, and obviously on the day beforehand, and I was down, and like it was about 5 minutes to kick off, and I'm like taped up and socks and gloves and ready to go, giving the lads the pep talk and everything, you know, and Aaron kind of just touches me on the shoulder and says, "We're gonna go with Craig today," and like just like below, you know, anyone hearing it. I said, "What? Excuse me?" This is like literally, like Sligo are in the tunnel.
More senior goalkeeper there as well. You know, I don't think you've done that particularly wrong as well.
Well, I can't recall any major errors.
I don't recall.
I thought I had it. If you look back at the stats, like I was relatively happy. I do like my stats. I thought I had a relatively decent season. The only real mistake I can remember is a down in Turner's Cross 1-1 draw. Let it on inside the post.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah.
But other than that, I thought I did relatively well. See, the problem with me is that because I'm generally overweight, I'm an easy target. I'm an easy target for performances and stuff like that. But if you look back on the stats, I'm fairly happy with how I performed. But obviously then after that, I had a bit of a falling out with Aaron, let's be honest with you, just the way it was dealt with. And I don't think I played again. I think I might have got a token game before the end of the season, and that was pretty much it for me. I couldn't go back after that.
And you think you could have, you know, you didn't, you finished up with balls. Was there offers around the league, or did you just say, I have enough of this?
It was a bit of both. I had to go back to a part-time team. It had to be part-time because I had a good job in Airtricity, the league sponsor at the time. And I had a good relationship with them because obviously they were the league sponsor. So they were a little bit more lenient, letting me off a little bit earlier and stuff like that. So I did have aspirations of going back, but I have to be honest, that whole experience sort of turned me off it. I took a few months off. I went back and played just with my mates in the United Churches for 6 months, and
I played in the Churches as well, by the way.
So yeah, look, it was disappointing. Like, I don't hold any grudges against Aaron or anything. Like, he made a decision for whatever reason. That's football. I disagreed with that at the time, and I kind of called him out on it, and he didn't like the confrontation. Like, Aaron didn't like confrontation from anyone, so you know, he took exception to it and pretty much didn't play me for the rest of the season. That was it, you know.
He did ask you to come back in 2013 to challenge Delaney.
Yeah, it was a bit of a... Dino, I had already heard, Fred had sort of given me the heads up that Dino was coming in, you know. They'd already arranged that a couple of months beforehand, and the deal was done pretty much for Dean to come in. And like, I was willing to... Like, Greg and Craig were still there, and we were willing to all battle it out for a spot, but... as I said, I just didn't like the way things were handled, so I decided to knock it on the head and not go back in the end.
Dave, you stayed for 2013 season. I remember going out to watch a friendly against Wayside, myself, Jimmy Dignam and Christian Payton.
You fucking eat losers watching their bleeding pre-season friendly.
Yeah, I've seen you out in the AUL. Don't fucking start with me.
We were testing things that day.
Yourself and Stephen Paisley lined out centre half. I think I knew that year we were going to be absolutely fucked. But you stayed till kind of midway through that season, and then you left. Or did you stay the whole year in 2013?
I think I stayed the whole year. I stayed the whole year.
You didn't play much.
I think Owen took over then.
Took over after around July when Aaron left. He left after a 4-0 defeat. Yeah, he didn't leave, actually. He was sacked, to be fair.
Just like Owen left me out in a match down in Cork. Same sort of situation with you. When we got down there in the hotel, he just said, listen, I'm leaving in the stands. And I was like...
Yeah, the thing with those two, like, just from a player's perspective, and as I said, like, I don't hold any grudges. Managers and coaches have to make those decisions, but I think those 2 years were very sort of
similar.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't know what was going to happen. Like, I remember playing 3 games in a row and then being in the stand the next game, and I'm saying to myself, like, what's going on? It was unpredictable.
The squads were 40-man squads.
Yeah, they were.
Everyone paying up subs.
Everyone was on 50 quid. Yeah. So I remember 2013, the fella called Santiago Falbo played for us. I was going to work one day. He holds a lap dancing sign in fucking Temple Bar. I was seeing him playing the balls. I said, oh my God. He'd be walking up and down, you know, the Viking from Leo Burdock's outside the bar.
I think it was on the internet, wasn't it?
What think of a membership for that place?
What? Leo Borlocks or
the strip club.
You both played for Bluebell together then?
Yeah, we actually signed for Bluebell because I knew Andy was there, and a good friend of mine, Gareth Cooney, was there, and Andy knew him, rang me, and like the players that he's had was unbelievable. He was winning things, and
you've won the league, Andy.
Yeah,
and you showed up to a game. Jamie, would you like to fill us in here?
Yeah, I got a bit of information off a Bluebell player who will remain nameless, Mario Dahl. But apparently you won the league against Crumlin, or you're playing them next morning, and your manager's looking around, where's my goalkeeper? And he said, oh, there's the equipment over there on the edge of the box. Turns out it was yourself, steaming drunk in the mix of the nets, the balls and everything else. He said, Andy, you ever played today? And you had to get the subkeeper instead to play your penultimate game of the season.
Yeah, that was... That was a low moment. I wouldn't be the biggest drinker now, especially the last few years, but Jesus, when we won, I think we got confirmation on the Friday and we were playing them on the Sunday, maybe something like that. And we were just on it like heavily for 2 days straight. And when it came to that game, I said to myself, I just can't do this. I remember the reason I was there early was a friend of mine was actually going boy, and he said, look, I can drop you, but it's like 4 hours early or something like that. And the sun was splitting the trees, and I said to myself, I'm just going to kip out here. And I fell asleep. In the middle of Pierce Park, I just fell asleep. And, shocking stuff.
Dave, you were involved in a kind of a very memorable night in Dalymount, the fight night. Who'd you fight against?
Your brother.
And obviously raised a lot of money for both. Also on that night, Pat Dunn fell out of the ring that night. Just like to remind everyone that Pat Dunn fell out of the ring.
And if you want to fight me next, there's no problem there, Patsy.
Don't, Pat, don't.
You played with Pat a couple of times, didn't you, Dave?
Yeah, Malahoy. Pat's another fantastic keeper. But,
another man who showed up drunk a couple of times the games.
He wouldn't box eggs, but you might have been showing yourself. I give you so many slaps, you'd be begging for to kick up the arse, Pat.
Dave, you're playing for Montpellier now still, but you also do a kids' coaching camp, is that correct?
Yeah, kids' soccer academy, because, the reason why I done the soccer academy is because I was no good at football myself when I was younger,
You're no good when you're older, either.
Yeah, well, but what I will say to kids, and what I'll always say to everyone is, and I said it to you before, and I even come on, hard work beats talent all day long. And if I had 11 hard-working players than 11 superstars, I'd take the 11 hard workers, because I guaranteed he'd beat the superstars 9 times out of 10, Andy.
Brilliant.
But it's just what I do, I take kids from 4 years of age right up till 7 or 8 and just give them the confidence and the basics just to go and join teams and give them interacting with other kids. Some kids don't even come into the cage after 2 or 3 weeks. They're telling their man all at 4 and 5 in the morning, when are we going to football? So that's what I want. And the Bowers Academy is right beside me as well, as it got. But I was talking with Conor Emerson, and I was talking to Home Farm as well. They want me to take over that academy, so
brilliant.
I seem to be doing a good job, and I don't know how I'm that bad at football.
how can people that want to bring their kids up, and be a few Bowls fans, or probably the kids listening in, where will they find the soccer camp?
I don't really advertise the soccer camp, because what I have at the minute is just enough for me. The less kids for me, the less kids for me, the more you can learn them.
Can I just say as well, just on Dave, he's such a good lad. He's done a number of different events for charity. He's even done free things to get kids back out onto the oaks. So, look, he's a really good lad. He won't say it himself, but he does love football, and he wants the future of kids' football to really get on. So he's willing to do all that stuff, and he's raised a few quid along the way for charity, so it's great for him,
We've heard that, definitely, Dave. You're involved in all sorts around the area, so fair play to you.
You do things, you don't have to talk about it, you know what I mean? If you want to do it, just do it. You don't have to praise yourself. So.
Well, that's what we're here for, I suppose.
Andy, you're the manager of Tech United now. Where do you play again?
Stradbroke. So for my sins, unfortunately, the knee is eventually given in.
How old are you?
I'm 32 now, so
that's very young.
You're not 32.
Hang on a second. Right, get the mics. I'm out of here.
I've been getting that on me. And funny, actually, I'll go back to when I signed with Bowls, I was only, do the maths, I was only 23, 24, something like that.
I'm fucking having a laugh.
Whatever it was, anyway.
That's the same age as me now.
I know I look fairly weathered, but fuck me.
So these two look twins.
He's pointing that way.
Even McNulty, obviously.
Aaron one training session, he gets all the experienced lads together, right, and he calls me over, and I'm standing between Detzer, Heary, Mullers, and all the rest.
Just on Detzer, he's not to send me a voice message, just let's see what this says now.
Oh, no,
this in the middle of the pod. Just show me out of the blue, let's see, listen to this.
Big time Charlie on podcast and all that now. Scully the Bully promoting himself up in fucking Cabra.
Oh, God.
That could be
incriminating. You wouldn't know what
he said. You're making out to be some sort of Tom Humphries character when it sounds things.
I took a chance there.
Could have got in trouble there. Yeah. That'll be getting edited out.
That won't be edited out. No, fucking hell. That's the content people want to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
Andy, with regards to Tech, how long are you there now?
I'm only dead. This is the first main season. I've only been there since September. So looking forward to it now. Throw my knowledge and my experience at something different now, management. So
there's not many goalkeepers who end up being managers, to be fair.
No, there's not. Funnily enough, I had this conversation. I don't know why.
They're all fucking psychopaths.
Well, he is going to be a good manager, because he knows how to get the best out of players, and he knows how to talk to people. I'd say you are going to be good, but you haven't made me an offer yet.
There's a reason for it.
I'm sure. And a phone call came from Eric in the morning, Andy. I said, hey man, do you want to sign for Dundalk? What would the answer be?
No, absolutely not. There's a man
of principle, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah. I tell you.
Oh, there's no limits to this man.
Brilliant.
What wow. I would say, I probably said just in the WhatsApp, all the teams need to be looking at balls now, what they're doing, the likes of Daniel Lambert and the new crew around, like,
yeah.
Getting the community involved and going to schools and getting the stadiums full, like, a good atmosphere around the whole league. Yeah.
Club sat in their arse for too long, yeah. And said, oh, FEI, give us this, FEI, give us that. The FEI aren't going to give you a fucking nothing, so you've got to get working on
them. If the FEI want the football from grassroots right up to the top to be good, you need to get, like, development offers into League of Ireland teams. Like, they're doing their own FEI camps and all that. Like, they should be running soccer academies for the teams, Bowers and all the other teams.
Yeah, definitely, because the clubs haven't got the funds. Obviously, the vicious circle of funds in the country between government, FEI, and the clubs themselves haven't got the money. So, like, as I said, you still fucking both play Leinster Senior League. You're both playing and you're involved in academies, you're involved in coaching. Like, everyone knows how underfunded football is. Mm. Like, we're going to have to start fucking changing this. I know the GAA has a stronghold, and even rugby and fucking
football needs to run itself like the GAA, to be honest.
Yeah, but I think as well, there has to be some respects. I think we have to just accept where we are and put a plan in place to go forward, because unfortunately, we've been talking the same.
Same conversation.
Same conversation for year and year. And I just don't think there's the conversations don't go anywhere, unfortunately. And I think, you know, as Scully just said there, I think clubs really have to take it by the scruff of the neck now. And in fairness, Bowers are one of them. They're inclusive of the community, stuff like that. And what happens is when you include the community,
definitely,
the support on the back of that is incredible. And you can see that with Bowers. I don't know how many season tickets were sold, but I remember every update they were just going up and up and up, and I think they broke the record.
With Delaney going, I thought it was going to be a fresh start. Like every club in the league should be full time. Like this, like, I'm working on construction sites all my life. I'm working on a site all day, going to play a match Friday night for Bowers, the biggest club in the league. Like,
yeah,
like it's not acceptable. Well, not anymore. But it's not acceptable. Like, you're working on a site like from 7 in the morning till 4 in the day, and then you're going trying to prepare yourself for a match. Like, it's not good enough. It shouldn't be.
There's too many players doing that for too long.
Yeah, I think there's probably 80% of the players doing it.
I think we are moving towards that, though. If you look at a lot of clubs, I mean, Bowes, the whole part-time thing is not a brand anymore.
It's a media story.
It's a media story of Bowes now. Bowes is full-time. It's one of the most professional setups in the league now up in DCU. Most of the players, if not 90%, bar the under-19s lads, are on a full-time wage.
Yeah, but you think of it, right? The best player in the league and the captain of Bohemians, right? He's working full-time as a painter, and that's Keith Buckley, a good friend of mine, like. And then he's going to play at the highest level for Bohemians. Like, it's not good enough, like. You know what I mean? Like, it should be full-time in the mornings, the whole teams. If you want the league to go forward, that's where all clubs have to do. And that's where the FEI have to get on board with all the clubs. Yeah. And they need to bring development offers in from grassroots right up into the first teams. And that's a fact, like, because the league is going to just stay as it is, Andy, and it's not going to produce. And if a player plays well for 6 or 7 games, he's going to be snapped up in England, whatever. Like, you know,
I think there is definitely a desire and a support within the country for your respective clubs. There's so many fans, there's so many backing. It just needs to sort of pull off that.
Do you feel, let's say, after COVID, when fans are back, I think there's going to be the biggest explosion.
Cork are bottom of the league down there, and they're
going to have 7,000. Yeah. I think it's going to be the biggest explosion of kind of culture for quite some time. As in, you're going to have everyone. I want to be at that ground. I want to be on this night out. I want to be at the football. I want to be at live football. Doesn't matter what club it is. Now, hopefully, the likes of fucking Athlone and Longford and other shit clubs like that get big fans back in.
I think it's going to be is that if we have phased in stadiums, we have 200 or 300 fans. That could kill that opportunity.
Well, hopefully, what we're talking, let's say next season at least, when we're back to full capacity, I think it's going to be a big explosion, and I think people are going to be falling in love with League of Ireland again, hopefully.
But the thing is that clubs know that now.
Yeah.
And they have to start preparing for that. There's no point a week before the first time you're going to have a full stadium, and there's nothing there to attract people back, like facilities and stuff like that. That's been one of my gripes for a long time. The facilities in the clubs, and in across the country now, they have been gradually getting better, to be fair, but some of them are completely unacceptable.
Even the dog can't he, like, you know what I mean?
It's great. As a goalkeeper to go up and play on that Astro pitch, I know you played in the old Astro pitch up there, probably.
Yeah, Jesus, that was horrific.
Yeah.
The Lillian's not much better now. No, Lillian's one that they put down to a piece of shit.
There's more injuries up in Dundalk than any other stadium, and Derry as well at the moment. I think a lot of players, particularly Bowes players, not Rob Cornwall's gone off injured on both pitches, Danny Grant.
Rob Cornwall's gone injured in every game this season.
I think Rob Cornwall has made a glass again, unfortunately.
But the thing about that is
he's a good model, but.
He's the best
one. He's a boy, take that, man.
The thing about Dundalk is they got so much money, and instead of it being pocketed, they should have reinvested it. Like, look, I know
it's all about 90 minutes for Dundalk. It's not about behind the scenes.
Exactly, they reinvested in the squad and putting more wages on the table, rather than if they put an Astro or an academy up around the Dundalk area, they would be very, very there. Like, they'd be there or thereabouts to dominate Irish football for a long time. And that's what clubs need to do when you have that opportunity to build on it. But I just don't think people do it enough, you know. Mm.
And I don't think Bowes probably get the credit. We've got nothing but stick off with our fans. We're laughing because obviously Sean McCabe didn't score last week again.
it's always his fault. Like,
that's what Bowes, we got a lot of stick for the hipster show. But I don't think we get enough credit because a lot of clubs, I think, have jockey backed off Bowes publicity.
Yeah, 100%.
The people that slag Bowes are actually jealous of Bowes.
Absolutely.
And they'll end up doing the same thing as Bowes.
Yeah, right. And even on Sean McCabe as well, he got a lot of stick. Every top club in the world, big club in the world, has an environmental or a climate officer. It's a fairly normal position for every club to have. And welcome to the club, Sean McCabe. I know you got a bit of abuse. I hope you score on Saturday. But it's a standard position for clubs all around the world, and it doesn't deserve any slagging.
But it's about moving with the times as well. There's going to be other things that
there's money in it. Of course, Bowes are involved. There's fucking money involved, you know. Bowes are going to be involved, you know.
Of course, exactly.
Bowes are there to learn from the mistakes, you know what I mean? And when this new stadium comes along, like, I think Bowes are going to be.
If we're able to fill that out, if we keep up the hype.
I think the problem is, that's limited to 6,000. I know we can only shout so loud because it's not our stadium, but
yeah,
I think there's an element we've limited ourselves.
I think people would have wanted the 8 rather than the 10. I think the 8 sounds like a very, very nice figure, you know.
Good night,
you guys. Thanks, Julie's here. Well, this bit be edited out anyway. This is all the end of this.
Scully for Ireland.
That's the intro there.
When David Scully plays football for his team, he's the best you ever seen. See him dribble, see him pass, watch him move across the grass. He's all said I was shy, but he's came and paid to see me play. Get up, Elvin.
Oh god, it's like a rap battle here this evening. We'll look ahead to the Waterford fixture now on Saturday. I think it's a 4 o'clock fixture. I have heard the word is that Stephen Mallon is going to be back for that game. We're all obviously excited. We're talking about him for the last 6 weeks in the podcast. Want to see him back. Hopefully see Bastian Haley. We're going to be missing Tyreek Wilson, who was sent off for
scandalous. He barely fucking touched.
It was really, really bad officiating once again from the worst set of match officials.
It was actually great being able to abuse the linesman again. I have to say, I'm really
happy for you because you love abusing the linesman.
We do, yeah.
They go against you if the fans are abusing.
Well, if you're the only person in the ground in the stand abusing them, I was down on block A abusing the lino as well.
If I was a lino, I'd say, I'm going to do something else to get this caught annoyed again.
I think that's what they do.
Possibly, stuck between Johnny Ward and a lot of other journalists.
I just abused Johnny Ward, to be honest.
They all had their laptops on the thing, and there's me, a fucking roaring abuse everyone on the pitch.
we're probably looking at, I think I heard Cornwall is going to be missing from this. Bucco had a dead leg the other night, so we should be back in contention.
Does Bucco get back in?
I think best player in the league always gets back in. What a player.
That is not the opinion of the One Up Top podcast.
That's the opinion of your best friend, Keith Buckley. What a player. So.
But I'd say we're probably looking at Feely playing centre-half again. Hopefully Andy Lyons will play. And obviously Anthony Breslin will come in left-back. Georgie Kelly will start as the One Up Top again, and we hope he gets some more goals. Have you got a prediction for the match, Mr. O'Reilly?
Yeah, I think Bucco comes back into the squad. And I think Waterford might be a bit stiff. I don't know why I'm saying that, but I think it could be 1-0 Bowes.
I don't think we're going to reach the heights of that we did on Monday.
To make those, like I said, the team was very young the other night. Like, to get that consistency, I think we might be still a bit off. So I do think we'll win. And like as you said, we're going to take this quarter by quarter. The first quarter, I can't remember what we got in our first five games.
We beat Waterford 1-0 away.
We beat Waterford, yeah.
Off the back of a 1-0 win in Dundalk as well. So
we're going to get four wins out of five, and Pat's game was, you get over that. Yeah. So I think 4 out of 5, yeah, going into the mid-season break is fucking brilliant.
I'm predicting 3 or 4 nil.
I think
Ward are a bit of a shambles at the moment. They're low in confidence. And Bowers are just hitting the heights. They're peaking from the last 4 or 5 weeks. The results haven't been going their way. And that result against Dundalk, I think they're going to hit them for 4 or 5.
Yeah,
I think the same. Like, you'd like to build on last night's results, you know. Obviously, you'd like to see our striker score again and a good performance. But I suppose the positive from a management point of view is that you've got these lads coming back into the squad now when you need them. You know, it's going to, the fixtures, they're not getting any easier. The results, they just need to come now. And I think they will. They were very unlucky in the last few games, as we said. But the performance is there, and I think they're building on it. So I can see a comfortable enough win for Bowes.
Yeah, I'd agree with the lads. I think maybe 2 or 3 nil, hopefully. And as I said, I think my biggest want out of this game is I want to see Bastian Harry and I want to see Stephen Mallon. But I'd like to win.
We're all looking for a Bowles win. And we asked Danny Grant the question last week. I'm going to ask you both to do it now. Pick your 5-a-side team of anyone you've ever played with.
Jesus.
And yeah, obviously you're in goal.
So between the two of you, you're up front, you're in goal. Who else is in the team?
Myself.
You have to stick Buckle in there, yeah.
Key Buckley, go with Detzer. Thomas Morgan, do you know Thomas Morgan?
No.
Good player. And probably go with Dave McKay.
Dave McKay, yeah. What about you?
I think from my Bowles days, I'd have to have Wardy and Bucco certainly in there. Wardy in that 5-a-side will do some damage. Smashing player, you know. When on the ball, he's just brilliant.
It's a shame to lose him in 2013. I think he went to Dundalk after that, was it? I think he went somewhere else.
Yeah,
he was such a good player.
That's another player that Dylan Connolly was in that team in 2012, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah. And I don't think so.
He was a few years later.
That's another player that has a bit of a good, like, he's just so good. You were playing against him in midfield, like Keith Ward, you'd be like,
he's a barrel now.
Jesus Christ, just moving with the ball.
He looks much fairer nowadays, though, to be fair. Yeah. He does well.
I think we heard he's got like this thing in his wrist where it shocks him if he doesn't do 5,000 meters every match or something like that.
Yeah, he's another like funny lad to have in the rest.
What a man. Yeah,
good lad. Dead, sir. You're losing your hair, mate. I'm just looking like you're here in the picture, mate. Just let it go, mate. Let it go. Stop fighting it. The only way around is go to Turkey, pal.
I'd be going with you, but it looks things well.
Says myself.
Andy, you're not
too far behind.
Jesus. Lads, I want to thank you so much for coming in. This has been absolutely fantastic. We've had an absolutely great laugh, and it's great to have two footballers again talking to us, two spoofers. Want to thank our sponsors once again. Grand Crew Beers for kitting us out. Vault Fashions as well, thank you very much. Jay Blake's Barbers, I reluctantly say that because I've got fuck all hair left.
And we've got a special outro today. Bowes DJ Oakley, better known as Aaron Shaw, he'll appeal to the younger fans and the older rave heads as such. His debut EP comes out, it's called Turning, I believe, or Sullis in the City. That's out Friday the 28th. I'm going to leave you spinning out to that one. So look, we don't encourage drugs, but if you want to drop an E for this deal, as we do every week, come on the fucking ball.
Come on the ball.
Yep, Scully, we're on it. Yep.